Diocese of Churches for the Sake of Others is pleased to present the C4SO podcast, a place to celebrate the voices and values of C4SO. C4SO is a national diocese of the Anglican Church in North America, led by Bishop Todd Hunter. You can learn more about us at c4so.org.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the C4SO podcast. I'm your host, Ben Sternke, and we are in the middle of a mini-series now on church planting right now on the podcast. So if you haven't listened to the other episodes, just a quick recap. First, we talked about the vision and process for planting, and now we're hearing what it's like to plant a church in C4SO. So just we had an episode about what it was like in the very beginning, and then the early stage of gathering for public worship. That was last week. And this week, we're focusing not so much on a phase of church planting, but a phase of life for the church planter. Church planting is often thought to be a young person's game, and oftentimes it is. Most of the planters that I know of are probably under 50 years old, but there's no a disqualifying age for church planting, of course. And so today we're going to talk about what it's like to plant a church when you're not so young anymore, when you're a bit more seasoned in ministry. So our guests today both are that. They're a bit more seasoned in their ministry experience, and they're planting new churches. One of them, as we were, I can't remember who it was, but one of them talked about themselves as the Caleb Caucus. Anyway, so if you don't understand that reference, probably go back and just read the Old Testament a little bit, and you'll understand maybe a bit more where they're coming from. So anyway, today we've got the Caleb Caucus, and we're eager to hear from them about how things are going and what they're learning as in their church planting. The Reverend John Gorin is planting Holy Trinity Church in Silicon Valley. Welcome back to the C4SO podcast, John.
Thanks, Ben.
And also we have with us the Reverend Billy Steen, who is planting All Souls South Placer in Lincoln, California, which is the Sacramento area. Welcome back as well, Billy.
Thank you, Ben. Good to be with you.
Yeah, I think you guys have both been on the podcast before talking about various things. John, probably just for a cycle of prayer spotlight.
Right.
Yeah, and then Billy, I think we had you on to talk about in our Reimagining Church After the Pandemic series. So it's great to have you guys both back. I'll start this one the way that I've started all these episodes. Just give us a brief spiritual history and ministry history. And then for this one, also tell us how old you are and then how you found yourself planting in C4SO. John, maybe we can start with you.
Yeah. So the short version, since I'm in my early 60s, actually 63, okay. The short version is I was raised Catholic. Uh-huh. And when I went to college, though, I got connected with a parachurch ministry that was emphasizing the Word of God, evangelism, discipleship. Mm-hmm. That meant a lot to me. But my Catholic upbringing meant a lot as well in terms of the beauty of liturgy, the majesty of God. So then after college, I found myself in London for a period of time and found an Anglican church, which was a marvelous fusion of those traditions. Yeah. And then this particular church was also doing a fair amount of spirit-led ministry. So there's that three streams element that was impressed upon me. Also met my wife, Vicky, in London. And so we got married shortly after that, settled in Silicon Valley, where I began a career in tech. Okay. So I was doing tech-related things for 18 years, enjoying that, and growing in faith, and eventually got a nudge and some discernment to come on staff with a large non-denominational, multicultural, actually mega church in the local area. So I came on board to be their pastor of small groups, which later on morphed into pastor of discipleship. So joyfully, but with some challenge, served there for 14 years. Okay. And then at the end of 2016, came away sensing that God had something new for us. Vicky and I didn't know what that was. So when we're in those places of life, we go to prayer, discernment, retreats, and we were at a Benedictine Abbey asking God, what is it? What's next? And we met two guys that were part of C4SO. They were just doing their own kind of church leadership retreat, trying to figure out what was next for their congregation. Got a conversation going that led to connections with Bishop Todd and that whole C4SO process at the time. And then eventually I found myself as the church planter in residence up at Eucharist Church in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And, you know, part of the reason I think we're planting is because Eucharist is in San Francisco, there's St. James in San Jose, but there's really nothing in the peninsula area. So we're part of Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, what a marvelous opportunity. What an amazing gift, but also what a challenge as yeah, well. Yeah. So that was kind of our journey. First part of my adult years in tech, and now this second half really in ministry, and most recently as part of the Anglican effort of C4SO.
Very good, John. Thanks for sharing that. Billy, how about you? A little history and how you find yourself planting.
Sure. I graduated Fuller Seminary at the ripe old age of 24 and had been on staff at a church here in Sacramento during my college years. And they wanted to plant a church. It was really at the time when church planting was really just becoming into vogue as a kind of missional thrust for the church. We didn't know a whole lot about it, but we had a small group contingent of people from our home church that formed a core, and so we started, and I ended up spending 25 years there. Wonderful years of our life, some hard years, as church planters know, and then I was also during that time a Reserve Army chaplain, and following 9/11, I ended up deploying a couple of times and really had taken about a 5-year swath out of my being present. And they just needed a senior pastor, and it was just a difficult situation. So it became God's providential way of moving me on. I ended up on active duty for about 12 years and then retired and had to pray about what to do next, and didn't want to just sit by a golf course and sip iced tea. So I was out running one morning, early dark 30 at Fort Dix, New Jersey, and thinking about the next leg and praying as I was running. And the Lord just imprinted across the front of my brain those great words, preach the word in season and out of season. Because I think I really had been led by a number of good chaplain buddies to think, oh, you don't want to go back to pastoral ministry. That's the last thing you want to do. But that's what I've always loved and what I gave my life to. But those words gave me pause. But that was one occasion. And there was another occasion a couple months later where the Lord just imprinted on my heart and spirit, feed my sheep. That's what you're called to do. And so we had a small group of people here in this area that wanted to start a church. And we said, as long as we've got, a handful and we feel God's calling, we'll go. So we did.
How did you get connected then to C4SO? Missed that.
I had been ordained. I was raised and ordained Wesleyan, but pretty reformed in my theology after leaving Fuller. Had been trained by some wonderful Anglicans. So I always felt a pull that way, and I would not have. I could have left during my chaplain years. In fact, when ACNA came into existence, then Mark Nordstrom, who was an Army chaplain, became the kind of bishop for the military. I could have done that, and it was where my heart was. I had good friends in the Anglican Church, but I wanted to wait until it became there was good reason and a definite leading of God to do that. And when it came to church planting and thinking about what this would look like and my priority being trying to equip the next generation, the question I had to ask is where would I like to be able to send young men and women? And there was no question about that. And so that's how I ended up with this diocese.
Very good. Well, let's talk a bit more about the actual church plants that you guys have on your hands now. I wonder if you could describe what phase you're in, what are the kinds of things that you're doing right now, in that phase? How are you funded? I think that's a really interesting question for most church planters. Like, how do you pay the bills? How does that work? What do you end up spending your time doing? And then what will be the indicators to you that it's time to move on to the next phase? John, maybe we can go back to you and start with that question.
Yeah, next month will be our 2-year anniversary of meeting on Sundays, which is great, and looking forward to celebrating that. Yeah. We meet on Sunday afternoons in a rented sanctuary, and we've actually been thankful for pretty low costs for all our startup stuff. When we did the budget, you know, we had some pretty big numbers associated with the typical things that go with that. But through the generosity of not only our host church, but others that have been helpful, our costs are low. And then we are kind of in a regathering. We've been back in the host church and meeting post-COVID for the last couple months now, which has been encouraging.
Yeah,
we are a church of about 25 to 30 people. And so that's also kind of encouraging in terms of phase.
Yeah.
But I think we want to keep developing kind of who we are as a community. That was one of the benefits of COVID, probably the only benefit of COVID that comes immediately to mind. You could go deeper because it was hard to meet. But each week we're getting one or two visitors. I'm spending time following up with them.
Yeah.
And there's just the normal routine of planning a weekly service and preparing a message and organizing some teams and things that go with that. In terms of support, God's been more than faithful in providing us the funds we need. We've been early on, there's a group of Anglicans that had a heart to see a church planted, an Anglican church planted in our area. Mm-hmm. So they made a multi-year commitment to us to be generous. So that was great. We've gotten some support from other groups like the deanery, the diocese helps a bit. Our inside giving is actually pretty healthy for a church of our size. So a combination of those things has meant that's of the typical concerns the church plant faces, that's not at the uppermost of my list right now. So we're grateful for that.
Yeah.
I think you asked about what the next phase looks like.
I think I'm curious about, what that might look like. You know, what are things that you're waiting on that you think you might like to do, and when would you know that it's time to do them?
Yeah, so Silicon Valley is a pretty transient place, and of course, we experienced some of the digital diaspora during the pandemic. We lost we lost a couple families, which was hard. They moved back to areas that were more affordable or where they were from.
Okay,
and so we're light on kind of that family ministry, if you will, that opportunity to provide a community. So that's a big heart for us and a prayerful, joyful burden to Lord, okay, who are the families? So the next phase would be more of a children's ministry, if you will, and just more of that addition to our community.
Yeah. Billy, how about you? What are you guys doing? Are you gathering for worship? How are you funded? You know, kind of what do you find yourself doing on a typical week?
So we too have just passed our second anniversary. So we'd been going a few months before COVID hit.
Yeah.
We started our public worship services immediately because that was part of the impetus and desire among the core group was a place of worship.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did that. And the Lord brought us a number of families along the way in that very beginning time.
Okay.
Because I have my Army retirement, I can work at a pretty low pay level. I still have to work. I'm still, I'm still a working age and need to work.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of had set an irreducible minimum that we needed to get to by a certain time, or else I would have to think about being bivocational and doing something else besides. We reached that place, and we've been sustained there. And we started with zero reserves. I kind of funded all of the startup cost, and I was eventually reimbursed for those, which was a wonderful gift.
Mm-hmm.
but we got going, and yeah. The Lord has provided wonderfully. And through the COVID time, we were meeting on Zoom. Mm-hmm. We actually increased our reserve on our operational account over that time. And so it's still very much of a faith venture, but the Lord has provided for us every step of the way. We have a part-time music couple who are very gifted, and we're right now looking for a part-time children's ministry director.
Okay. And you guys have regathered for in-person worship
as well? And we would consider ourselves as a relaunch now. We picked up quite a number of strays on Zoom during those times, but people that were too far away to attend in person, and were glad to come on Zoom, but
I see.
But we didn't anticipate, and we were correct about that they wouldn't sustain. But we've continued to have visitors, ones and twosies here and there, coming, and so we're still short of critical mass. We're at about 25, but we're encouraged.
Yeah. Very good. Let's maybe focus on the geographic context that you guys are both in. I wonder for you're planting, Billy, in the Sacramento area. Is that right? Lincoln,
yes, that's
California,
correct.
Is that? Yeah, that's Sacramento. Of course, Silicon Valley and Sacramento they're both in California, so they're very, very similar, I'm assuming. That was a joke. I'm assuming they're not very similar. But anyway, what are some of the unique challenges and opportunities of planting in your geographic context? Billy, we could start with you. Just in Sacramento there, what do you find is challenging about that? And what do you find are unique opportunities about Sacramento?
Well, it's a growing area, and a lot of people migrating from the Bay Area specifically for the reason of housing affordability.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And so so it's a growing area. There are there's a couple of big mega churches. One of them, 10,000-12,000 and, four different campuses kind of thing. But in terms of kind of really solid evangelical churches, it's a little bit sparse apart from the mega churches. There's mega churches, and then there's little church plants that come and go, and not much in between.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
Hey everybody, welcome once again to the C4SO Cycle of Prayer Spotlight, where we highlight the specific ministry that we're praying for this week in our diocesan cycle of prayer. This week we're praying for Trinity Church in Marysville, California, led by the Reverend Victor Schreffler, and he has joined us to share briefly about what's going on right now and how we can pray specifically for them. Victor, welcome to the C4SO Cycle of Prayer Spotlight.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yes. What's something that you're encouraged by right now?
Yeah, we're encouraged by our ministry to the dying. We are a small congregation, and yet our impact has really been multiplied by the work we're doing with hospice.
Hmm. Is that something recent for you guys?
It is. It's something we've been ramping up for about since the spring. It's been complicated by COVID and the requirements there, but a neat thing about hospice is it requires community involvement. And so we tied into that, and some of our very dedicated volunteers have plowed through all the paperwork that's necessary for them to be vetted for this.
Okay.
And so we have volunteers from the church. We probably have 8 to 10 of our small congregation involved in this. And they're going out visiting patients. And sometimes it's just a matter of sitting with a patient while the family gets a little bit of a respite. Sometimes it's talking with them. We have one volunteer that's doing some bereavement work with the spouse of a deceased patient. And so she goes weekly to the facility where the surviving spouse is and sits with her and talks with her. So it's really given us a bigger sense of the impact of the church, that even a small congregation can have a very large impact through the avenue of hospice.
That's fascinating. That's something I've never heard before.
Yeah.
So that's really encouraging to hear. Tell me about a challenge that y'all are facing right now.
Okay. So to kind of keep the hospice theme, the challenge of getting through COVID, it's still a lot of mandates in California and the challenges of it's sort of like it was getting through the elections in the sense that there's the challenge of having people in the congregation that are very much against masks and people in the congregation that are very for masks and some that don't want to do the vaccination, some that do. And so trying to model what a peaceable community can look like even on such potentially divisive issues.
Okay. Yeah. Well, in light of all this, Victor, how can we pray for you and for Trinity?
Yeah, I'd appreciate prayer for the continued blessing on our hospice ministry. Yeah. Christians have been ministering to the dying since the very beginning days of the church. And so I think it's right at the heart of what it means to be Christians in the world today. So praying for that, I've been in more unchurched homes in the last 2 years as a hospice chaplain than probably 30 years of pastoral ministry. So it's a huge area that I think any church could really tie into.
Well, very good. We'll keep that in mind in prayer. Victor, thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
Very good. Thanks, Ben.
John, how about you? What's it like to plant in Silicon Valley? What are the challenges and opportunities there?
Yeah, great question. You know, Silicon Valley has its own sort of storied reputation in a lot of ways. I mean, it is a huge cultural influencer for a ton of reasons. It's the cradle, if you will, of a lot of what has changed our world. Just think of social media, for example. But because of all that, all those things that go with tech, it also is a place of great disparity. You know, as the affluence increases here, it tends to have a squeezing effect out on those that don't get to participate in that tech side or some of the ancillary communities or businesses that are part of that. So, and that's just grown. So that's both a challenge, but an opportunity. I think one of the ways we've sought to address it is by getting plugged into local food banks that need both volunteer help and meal prep, because food insecurity is a huge thing in our area. It's gone up threefold just in the group that we're supporting in terms of the number of guests and clients that they're that they're servicing. So I think that's it's interesting.
So
how do you present, you know, one of the challenges, how do you present the gospel in a tech world to people that are in that industry? How do you live out the gospel to those that aren't part of that? I think that's honestly what one of the blessings of the Anglican tradition. There's many, you know, on ramps to through that for people. So
the title of this episode will be something about, you know, planting when you're not so young anymore. So let's talk about that context. You know, the you have your geographic context, but also what are some of the opportunities and challenges that you found planting as a more seasoned minister? John, maybe we can start with you. What have you found?
So one of our values from the get-go when we were thinking about Holy Trinity was to be intergenerational. You know, pastors, church plants, the demographics tend to reflect, you know, a 10-year skew either side. So in my early 60s, we got people in their 70s and their 50s. Awesome. But we just felt like we were called to reach beyond that and to, you know, pray for people in millennial generation and Gen Z. And by God's grace, he's provided that. So we're about half millennial Gen Z and half everybody else, which is great. So from my perspective, where I am, that actually takes, it just takes engagement and involvement. I don't presume to know the priorities and the experiences of other generations. But I think from where I am as a boomer, if you will, that provides a certain wisdom and a certain life experience that can be beneficial and helpful and edifying. And at the same time, those from other generations also contribute who they are and what their experiences are. And I think that keeps us appropriately younger. I mean, in the years and decades ahead, it's going to be these generations that assume more leadership. And so how can I mm-hmm. facilitate and steward yeah. that? Yeah. So one of the challenges in our particular area that goes with this is we're just a transient area. People aren't going to be here for that long. We don't assume that they are, whether they're yeah. coming for a grad school program or they're here for tech and can now work from anywhere kind of thing.
Yeah.
So one of our just senses of who we are is we want people to be able to say, however long they're able to invest in the Holy Trinity community, this was significant in their spiritual formation in Christ, that they can look back on this time if they have young kids, young adults, as families, and just say, that was phenomenal. God really used that in amazing ways. That's our hope.
Yeah. So kind of going with the flow of the transients rather than always trying to just fight against it or resent it or resist it.
Right. No.
Yeah.
We trust that Holy Trinity will continue, but the people in it, at some point, the rector who's over it, those kinds of things will change in time.
Yeah. Well, here's a question I didn't send you, John. I'm interested in. Besides, you said you prayed for millennials, Gen Z, some younger folks to attend the church and be part of things. Besides prayer, are there other things that you can point to that made a way for that to happen? I think you're right. That sort of 10-year skew on either side is that sort of common, right. church planter wisdom that I heard as well. So it seems remarkable to me that you can be planting as a boomer, but also have a lot of these young people. And I wonder if there's other things that you did that maybe created an atmosphere that felt hospitable to them.
Yeah. Early on when we were casting vision, by God's grace, there was a young family that jumped on to the vision and were a part of this. And then we had also done some evening prayer in Palo Alto. So we had some people from Stanford come and kind of connect. So some of these had an Anglican background, but we're looking to support what was going on. We have acted, we've had a job posting for an associate rector or pastor, but that would be somebody who's in the millennial generation for us because many hands make light work. We want to make sure that we can bear that and share that opportunity as well as burden across generations. Yeah. So I think the other response I'd add is just allowing participation and sharing out opportunities, insights, wisdom. I mean, this isn't all, I don't have a mosaic leadership style where I go to the mountain and come down with
that's great. I think that does provide a kind of a two-way street, a bit of a mutuality that I think is really attractive. That's really great. Billy, how about you? How do you find it planting a church as an older person, like as a, you know, what are the challenges and opportunities that you found?
Well, I think I would consider the greatest opportunity that, I'm able to bring my skills and experience and utilize them without being in the crucible of what it was in my early years of church planning, trying to figure out who I was while I was trying to plant a church at the same time. And, the church having to live through all of those iterations.
Yes.
And so that's wonderful. It's just because it's a joy. Every week of worship together with this group of people is a joy. That's wonderful. On the downside is the same reality that, we don't want to be just a church for other Calebs, obviously. And so, although we're thankful for them and they're wonderful people. So I teach at William Jessup, which is a Christian university right here next to us. Love that. And I'm pretty immersed in the lives of those students in the classes that I teach. We have not yet really bridged them into our congregation, and obviously they're going to be a transient population and not necessarily reliable, but that would be part of our long-term vision, is that it would be a mission field for God raising up young men and women in ministry. And so that's our goal. And we'll need another staff member to come alongside to, you know, potentially be groomed for a transition somewhere down the road, but also to be that bridge into, you know, younger families.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate the thought that you shared about how you just, the phrase that came to mind was, you're inflicting less of yourself on your church as you lead them.
You know, sometimes, like I've said before, I want to just look my parents in the face and say, you know how lucky you were? And I want to say that to the congregation sometimes.
Well, one last question for both of you. What do you wish you had known before you started planting? John, maybe we could start with you.
I think there's one thing, you know, beforehand, and then just something that keeps me going. The beforehand thing is when you think about church planting and all the tasks that are required, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, it's just executing those faithfully, a day at a time, or, you know, a week at a time. Yeah. Sometimes if I look at the big picture, or when I was thinking about it, it can seem pretty daunting. So, but you break it down into tasks and connections, yeah. and God brings people into your community more, and you can share those responsibilities. So I think to not let the whole, all the things that would be required just be, feel overwhelming if they can, if you focus on that. And the other thing that keeps me going is, you know, Bishop Todd often speaks about practicing a non-anxious presence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's still maybe a vestige of my days in tech. It's like, okay, you're always anticipating stuff and thinking forward and all that. But honestly, you know, God called us to this. He's resourced us amazingly. He's providing community members at the rate that we can be good stewards of that. And so to rest in his continued loving agency, I think is something I continue to need to remind myself.
Yeah.
So I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good words. Billy, how about you? What do you wish you had known?
Yeah, I think the one thing I would have done differently, that's what I'll share, is that we did not take really into account the importance of the space that we began in. And there was a local high school that was open to us, but the auditorium was just too big to start with. And in hindsight, we really should have looked for that. That's an important piece. After COVID, we ended up in a really wonderful public meeting room that's part of a public library. It's a beautiful complex. And it's just, it's so inviting and so welcoming to invite people to. And we just didn't take great enough stock in the importance of that when we began. And I think that probably hurt us with some initial folks who came and gave us a look.
Yeah. But it feels weird to have a small community inside of a big space.
Yeah,
it definitely is true. Yeah. 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 That's true. It affects more than you'd think. Mm-hmm. That's been something that I think I've learned over the years as well. So, well, this has been great. Billy and John, thank you guys so much for sharing some of your wisdom and your experience with us and sharing what it's like to plant as a more seasoned minister.
Thanks, Ben. Yeah, appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, thank you, Ben.
Friends, if you're listening and you'd like to find out more about Holy Trinity Silicon Valley or All Souls South Placer, I will put links in the show notes. Once again, Billy, John, good to be with you. We'll talk to you next time. Peace.
God bless.
God bless you.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of the C4SO podcast. We hope you enjoyed our conversation. Email us your thoughts and suggestions at connect@c4so.org.